Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Joan Vernikos as my special expert guest. Dr. Joan Vernikos, former director of NASA's Life Sciences, is an author, health coach, consultant, and sought-after motivational speaker on the tangible health and economic benefits to individuals and organizations to resetting your health for life, living healthy, and healthy aging. A pharmacologist from the University of London, her research and publications on the management of stress and how spaceflight and Earth's gravity affect men and women have been recognized with numerous awards. Dr. Vernikos holds 4 patents, a member of the International Academy of Astronautics. She served on the Space Studies Board of the National Academy of Sciences, a space correspondent for defense and foreign affairs. Her books include award-winning The G-Connection, Harness Gravity and Reverse Aging, 2004, Stress Fitness for Seniors, 2009, Sitting Kills, Moving Heals, How Simple Everyday Movement Will Prevent Pain, Illness, Early Death, and Exercise Alone Won't, 2011, and more recently, Designed to Move, the science-backed program to fight sitting disease and enjoy lifelong health. That was published in 2017. Good morning, Joan, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning, Corey. I'm delighted to be here.
It's our privilege and honor. Someone of your great intelligence and life skill and experience and academic background, I'm sure that our audience will be pleased with this conversation. Now, to begin with, everybody always wants to know a little bit about you personally. So tell us where you grew up. I played any sports growing up, and why you decided to pursue a career as a pharmacologist.
I have a strange background. My parents were Greek. My father was a doctor, and so we learned early on, my sister and I, we heard a lot about health. I was born in Alexandria, Egypt, and lived there until age 20 when I went to London to study. I played lots of sports at school, field hockey, swam competitively, did some rowing, sailing, and things like that near the sea. We lived on the Mediterranean. So it was natural. And as I grew up, now what I do is I do yoga and play a bit of tennis once a week. So I try to keep up. But I shall tell you, my secret right from the start is something that irritates people around me. But I am a pacer, if you know what that means. I'm constantly moving. I get on the phone and I walk and I don't realize I'm doing it. So one time I measured my steps and I decided to measure it in the house without ever going out, and I did 7,000 steps. So you can do it anywhere. You can walk, you can move, just do it anywhere.
Absolutely. Now, right off the bat, I mean, Alexandria, I've got to talk about that because I've been there. That was one of the places on my bucket list because I love Aristotle and I've studied all his works. Oh. And I know about the Library of Alexander and all the ancient scrolls and how they destroyed it. And we lost time, 1,000 years of time. We went back into the Dark Ages because of that. But what a fabulous place to grow up. I mean, you must have had doses of sunshine and a lot of outdoor activity growing up.
Absolutely. I mean, we swam in December and it was just wonderful. We were spoiled rotten. Lots of sunshine, sun worshippers, and all that. And it was just a great childhood, great way to grow up.
Well, that's so important, too, because a lot of people can't say that they've had that. Now, why pharmacology? What impresses you about that field? Why did you pursue that particular scientific avenue?
A lot of what I did, I tumbled into. Wasn't perhaps by design. My father, we had 2 girls, and he decided we were both going to be doctors. And my sister obliged and became a pediatrician. I chickened out the first time I was in the morgue and decided to take up pharmacy instead. When I finished pharmacy, I went to London, to the University of London School of Pharmacy. I had to repeat the last year. And my professor, whom I wanted to follow, because he was doing research in stress and how the brain regulates stress, and I thought it was pretty nifty, was moving to a department of pharmacology. So I found myself in the department of pharmacology. And so my degree, my PhD, was in pharmacology. What I actually did in research is studied hormones, which we don't think of as drugs most of the time, but believe me, they are. And they were very potent drugs. So I studied overall general pharmacology and more specifically hormones and as they were related to the response to stress. Now, I was minding my own business. I then went on to Ohio State University in the Department of Pharmacology Medical School, and I taught pharmacology to medical students. And it was there, and continued to do research, and it was there that a professor in physiology, who was British, in fact, said to me he was contemplating joining NASA. Well, nobody knew at the time what NASA was, and he was being recruited to head a department of biomedical and biological research. And he recruited five of us. I was at the Ohio State University, others were in other universities, and one of five to start out this unit. So one, like I was in stress research, someone was in circadian rhythms, another one was in metabolism and exercise, another one was a microbiologist and so on. So it was very exciting times. We had no idea what space was going to do, what we were going to find, but everybody thought that putting a human on top of a rocket was going to be stressful. So that's how I was recruited. And from then on, early on in the space program, 1966, in fact, we had the chance to actually measure the hormones that were secreted during the flight, 14-day flight of Gemini, two astronauts in space. And much to my amazement and everybody else's, there was no increase in stress hormones during the flight. There was before the launch and there was after the landing. But during the flight, in fact, the hormones were minimal. And everyone, including myself, said, you know, something's wrong. It can't be. Don't believe it. We looked at every conceivable thing. Everything was done in sort of simultaneously, the same techniques, the same storage. And I thought, well, this is the end of a beautiful career. Here I am to study stress, and there isn't any. And that, in fact, stood me well because I had to rethink what stress was all about. And, of course, later on when we studied astronauts, we found great increases in stress response. And it struck me that the original astronauts, the two of these were from the original seven, came from a military background. They had flown missions over Korea and Vietnam. And in fact, they were doing, by going into space, what they wanted to do. It was fun. It was nowhere near the danger they had experienced before flying over various places and dropping bombs or whatever they were doing. And that it's a question of perception of the stress stimulus as opposed to a yes or no situation. Not everybody responds to the same situation in the same way. It depends on how they perceive the threat of the stress. So that completely changed my outlook, and now, of course, it's sort of accepted on what stress is and how you can then approach the business of living with it and making the most of it, not controlling it as much as recognizing what it is and recognizes what it is you do and you see in the change around you. And how you can adapt now your thinking and your perceptions so that it is no longer a stress, but in fact you can actually use it to grow and develop and enjoy. So it was a very interesting time. But then, of course, I did kind of ease back on stress research, although I've always done something in it. But I thought to myself, well, I'm in NASA. What are we studying here? Well, we're going into space, and we're going, by orbiting the Earth, we're going away to a certain extent from the force of gravity. We're minimizing our exposure to gravity as we know it on Earth. And I better start studying, looking at that and see what happens. We had no idea what would happen to the astronauts. We started measuring changes before and after, cardiovascular changes, and then eventually developed a ground model to mimic the effects of being in space by reducing the influence of gravity, which normally, when you and I stand up, gravity is a force that pulls in one direction only downwards towards the center of the Earth. So when I stand up in that field, we call it G sub Z, it's pulling through my head down to my feet, through my feet to the center of the Earth. If I lie down, it's pulling across my chest. So the influence of gravity is minimized. Gravity is not changed. It's not reduced. But by having people lie in bed, volunteers, we used a lot of healthy volunteers, and we had them lie in bed with gravity pulling across their chest, and we studied what happened. And what's interesting is that as you know, in Victorian times and later, when you were sick, the doctors said you should go to bed and lie down and you'll recover. You didn't. And it got worse and worse, and you eventually died. Well, we found a similar sort of thing. If we took healthy volunteers and put them to bed, we made them sick. And the exercise in this horizontal state in bed helped, but certainly did not prevent the changes. And so we had to scratch our heads and try and figure out what it was and how it happened and what was taken away by lying in bed. And clearly the main factor that was taken away was the influence of gravity, not only in constant exposure, as we're always exposed to gravity all the time on Earth, but also every time we change position. So by changing posture, by standing up and sitting down and moving about and lying down, we are constantly changing our relationship to this force of gravity, Z, that we call GZ, that is vertical. And I tell my audiences that they should think of themselves as pole dancers. You know what a pole dancer is?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, think of yourself as a pole dancer where the pole is your virtual source of gravity pulling downward, and you maintain your health and your fitness by moving all around and relate in every which way to allow every part of your body to be come in contact with that vertical force. And that's optimal. That's what we're designed to do. Now, you're saying we're not all pole dancers. Well, we can imagine we are, but that's, you know, one way of looking at it. But we certainly can move about constantly. And that was the outcome of our findings, that if, for instance, in fact, the last study I did at NASA in my lab before I became a bureaucrat, I had the fellows lie in bed for, in fact, 4 days. That's all it took to produce drastic changes. Like VO2 max was reduced by 25% in 4 days. It's no joke. And the cardiovascular changes appeared. Plasma volume, blood volume was reduced by 10 to 12% in 4 days. So very drastic changes happen very rapidly when you reduce the influence of gravity. That's how important it is. And that, to cut a long story short, eventually led me to think about lying in bed is one aspect. But we don't all lie in bed all day long, but we certainly sit a lot. And then I started asking to what extent it was sitting sort of halfway there. And sitting continuously was the problem, and that we needed to interrupt sitting if we wanted to remain healthy.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's an amazing response. I mean, there's so much in what you just said. I mean, it's just my mind is teeming with activity. Hans Selye came to mind.
Absolutely.
Did you ever meet him in your career?
Yes, absolutely. And he was brilliant. He was very single-minded, which is good in some respects. But he did this wonderful study all his life of taking animals, whatever, that had died from all kinds of circumstances. And he was a pathologist, so he dissected them and found out that certain characteristics, certain organs changed, grew. The adrenal gland was enlarged. The thymus gland was shrunk. And that it was not, it didn't matter what they had died from. The response was a general response to a whole variety of onslaught of circumstances. And he called it the general adaptation syndrome, that we adapt to our environment. And then he called it stress, of course, in a pattern rather than in different ways. Now, we do respond to stress in different ways, and that is factored by our genetics, no doubt about it. But genetics is only about 10 to 20% of the reason, of the influence of how we respond to anything. So the rest is, fortunately or unfortunately, our environment and our way of life and what we do, and we condition our response to be different for different people in different circumstances.
Yes, very well said. The other thing that came to mind was what you're saying then about gravity, because I've always thought of it as a negative. I think you're saying it's a positive, in the same way that oxidation, radiation, entropy. People ask me, Corey, why do we meet our maker? What causes the demise of everything that exists? Mm-hmm. And these are natural forces in physics. Yes. And of course, I've studied oxidation pathways on a cellular level and different theories about anti-aging and longevity, etc. Are you saying at the end of the day that mm-hmm. gravity is more of a plus than a minus for health and longevity?
If you're going to live on Earth, as most of us are, then gravity is the natural force, our stimulus for life on Earth. For life on Earth, I'm not just talking humans. Okay? And it depends on what we do relative to gravity, to whether we take advantage of this stimulus or allow it to harm us. Like anything else, you know, in excess, it's going to harm us. Too much gravity is not good for you either. But that's what's interesting that we've seen in space is that we thought that all these changes that we see in space and we see in bed rest, the loss in muscle, inhibition of protein synthesis in muscle, the loss of bone, relative dehydration, which is a decrease in blood volume. Every single cell and every system in the body is affected by the absence of gravity. Okay. Now, we thought, like every other variable, that after 3 months or two, 3 months, the astronauts would adapt. Well, that we now have been in space with a largest number of astronauts and cosmonauts for 6 months. And a few, I'm sure you've seen the news on Kelly and certainly a few Russians, almost up to a year. And the net result is that we're reaching a point where changes continue. They have not adapted, and they do not look as if they adapt. They keep deteriorating. And not only that, new changes, adverse changes are appearing that we didn't see earlier on. But they're all related to the response to living without gravity. For instance, we've seen in animals and certainly in humans, the endothelium, you know, the lion's blood vessels, practically disappears. And that's terribly important because as the blood swishes around, it stimulates endothelium production. and the endothelium production stimulates the release of something called nitric oxide, which is very important in keeping blood vessels contracting. And so it's not only in blood vessels. Endothelium is everywhere. It's in collagen, in joints. And so we don't know where things will stop if they do. So it looks as if gravity is such a fundamental aspect of living on Earth that we might not be able to live without it. Now, this is an extreme statement, but it's also very important when we send people into space to know whether we intend to bring them back to live on Earth. Now, you have heard, I'm sure, like I have, of a lot of people who want to go one way to Mars, for instance. Well, that's one thing. But if you're going to have people return to Earth and be healthy and live their life out on Earth and recover, then we have to change the way we look at the changes that occur without gravity or with less gravity, because it's not without gravity, it's 10 to the minus 5. We call it microgravity. There is a little bit, but that is below the threshold, appears to be below the threshold. Now, on Mars, there's about 1/3 gravity, and on the Moon, it's 1/6. So if you remember the landing of astronauts on the Moon, the Apollo astronauts, they did not float around as they do in space, or they hopped, but they were vertical. And so it appears that maybe around the 1/6 to, you know, 1/2 to 1/3 is we'll find the threshold for what the system needs to perceive for its receptors to be activated. Therefore, if that's true, then Mars probably has adequate gravity above the threshold at 1/3. And if you carry like a heavy backpack of life support, then you might be able to enhance that. It's got other problems. It's a very oxidizing environment, and the Moon surface is silicon. Basically, the powder is a very corroding environment to breathe if it gets into the spacesuit. So there are other problems that we need, but we might be able to protect. But the basic influence of gravity is so fundamental, it appears, that we have not figured out yet how far we can go without it. It's not a happy picture. Now, what can we do? We can replace it. We can provide a replacement by providing a centrifuge rotating on board. But there are aspects to how you expose yourself, how many times you expose yourself, and in what direction you expose yourself to gravity, or for that matter, exercise, which is what they do now once a day, very, very intense exercise, 2 to 4 hours a day. But the minute they stop, you see, they're right back in microgravity. As opposed to on Earth, when you exercise once a day and you stop, you're still in a gravity environment. So, yes, if you sit around and you don't do anything the rest of the day, you will not have no benefit from the exercise. That has been shown. But if you are active the rest of the day, you will experience the benefit of the exercise you do once a day. Let's face it, the Earth goes around, it circles around itself, around the Sun, and is exposed, generates gravity in doing so. Now, we have night and we have day. And at night we lie down and we sleep, and we're horizontal with gravity in the G-sub-X direction. And then light comes on, the Sun rises, you wake up, and what do? Well, I get all kinds of answers. But anyway, you open your eyes, you wake up, you get out of bed, you stand up, and you start moving. And theoretically, daylight hours are intended for you to move every which way, and you go about your business, do your jobs and whatever. It is not intended for you to stay in bed or to sit in a chair, wherever you happen to be sitting, all day long. So it's part activity, but most importantly, what I found in that one last experiment, it is the postural change, the lack of postural signal. And it's like a tuning. It's on, off as you move about, especially changing your relationship to the vertical stimulus. So if you sit in a chair long enough, and it's not hours, it is 30 minutes, within 30 minutes, triglycerides are increased. 30 minutes of sitting has been shown to increase triglycerides. But that is not 6 hours. So it gives you the message that if you're going to sit, you better do something about getting up, moving about every 30 to 60 minutes at least. You don't need to do much when you sit up. It's not a question of exercising every 30 minutes. If you want to do it, good luck to you. But you don't need to. You can stand up, you can stretch, you can program yourself to do something. You can go to the printer, you can go to a copier, you can go to the bathroom, you can squat, which is an excellent movement that we used to do and we rarely do it in our culture anyway, anymore. So it is bringing back some of the natural things our body's designed to use as stimulation. And then when it's dark again, we go back to bed and we sleep. And we reduce the influence of gravity on the body. So the need of movement is intermittent, high-frequency movement. It's probably the most powerful, inexpensive, and highly effective strategy for health and longevity.
Agreed. Very nice, very nice. I sit in front of a computer and do research, etc., but I listen to a lot of, like, for example, I was just listening to your presentation down in Florida. I've seen and listened to many of them. Now, when I'm listening to these, I'm in my office and I play darts.
Okay.
Instead of sitting down. And I got rid of my car 10 years ago. So I walk to the gym. I walk back home. I walk and do shopping. Very European, you know, like walking.
Yes. Yes.
And I know that sitting is the new smoking, they say, and that movement is critical and essential. But what's misinterpreted? I know, you know, I'm an athlete. I know a lot of athletes, competitive, and a lot of people believe that just going to the gym for an hour, working out, is all you need. But what you're saying is you've got to move a lot in between practically, like whether it's gardening or just getting up or squatting or whatever, because you're right, we don't even poop properly anymore. Yep. We're so out of control, so artificial, so domesticated that we've disconnected ourselves from that beautiful lifestyle that you lived as a child in Alexandria, where you're running and playing and outside. Very few adults live like that.
No. You know, I think we oldies, not you, but I, have an advantage over the following generations because our youth was full of activity and outdoor living. And we didn't have technologies that surrounding us all the time, no iPads when we were babies or cell phones. So we have at least our developmental years a healthy exposure. I don't know what's going to happen to these kids who are stooped over texting from at 1 or 2 years old. It's tragic.
Well, I've got grandkids. I'm sure you do. Do you have any grandkids?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And I've got 5. And so I emphasize when I spend time with them very, very strongly, movement, parks, hiking, playing games. You know, what it does for me is equal to what it does for them. But it brings me back to a state of joy and bliss. It's just so simple. And what you're saying is actually quite simple to the point and direct. But it seems as if in today's time and age and the mentality of people that they're incapable of accepting what is obvious and self-evident. It has to be complex. They're looking for some kind of complicated answer when it's just looking and staring at them right in the face And they won't do the simple things like, for example, like you said, just stand up every few minutes on your computer. They just literally won't do it.
And the only way that you can get people to do it is make it back as a habit so that it is structured in your life. So that every so often you drink some water so you have to go to the restroom. You know, that sort of thing. Put your machines at a distance so you have to get up. Just have stand-up meetings. I used to have stand-up meetings at NASA. But it's also that the people expect a single thing to be the cure. And I don't think people realize these days that it is everything you do, every single little bit that you do. And it's not the same thing every day, every time, or whatever. And the variety, the diversity of the movements, the diversity of the exposures that stimulate your body constantly. And of course, you sit and age in a nice comfy armchair because you're not moving and you're not stimulated. And it's as simple as that. It's all wonderful and padded, but you're not stimulated when you're supposed to be stimulated, which is during the day. And at night, to sleep properly in a dark room without electromagnetic fields. And it's such an artificial way of designing our life. And we have to go back to thinking basic, stepping back and thinking about the basics and taking it from there. It's doable. I think they're beginning to have in schools, for instance, tables instead of desks. The business of having kids sit is no longer such a dogma. You see, what I'm talking about, this intermittent movement, is the foundation to exercise. If you think of exercise or activity as aerobic exercise, getting on a treadmill or a bicycle or whatever, that's already one step beyond the foundation. And if you do it without the foundation, yes, you might increase your VO2 max, but you are not reaping the overall benefits. You have to start with a basic foundation. You can't skip the foundation and go to the next level. You can't become an elite athlete without the foundations. You have to take it in steps. So the foundation is this constant moving. It is the gardening. It is the walking. It is the, if you want to bicycle, you can bicycle. But then you up it. And then you go take aerobic. And then you take the strength. And then you go, perhaps. But if you see people going training for marathons and they're sick, they're not healthy. That's all they do. So it's a composite. If you look at activity as a pyramid, that you must, if you're going to do anything at all, you must feed your foundation and use gravity to do that. It's there. It's free. I see people walking. It's wonderful. I see ladies going by my window. I think it's absolutely wonderful. But what? They're stooping. They're looking down at their feet. Their shoulders are stooped. Their head is forward, which means that gravity is pulling their head forward through the back of their head, which is not healthy. So if you're going to do it, try and do it right. Squatting is wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Sumi squat is fabulous. I remind myself when I'm playing tennis, because I've watched Djokovic, not that I can play anything like him, but but you in waiting for the ball to be served, I do chair squat, basically, and contract muscles. It doesn't show. It makes the world of improvement instead of just standing there. So it's doable. It's just bringing back the joy of it.
Very, very nice. Very poetic. What you said is so potent. I mean, these lines, I love movies, and movies, for me, affect me with great emotion. And I wait for the lines that the writers put a lot of thought and intention into, and they just leap out from the film, leap out from the book, and affect my life on such a powerful level. And that's exactly what you've done. Joan, what is your website address?
It's joanvernikos.com.
And what will we find there when we get there?
I hope you will find a lot of information about myself, my publications, my books, what I'm up to. I have a newsletter that comes out about every 1 or 2 months that I try to bring to the attention of people things that are happening, ideas they might get, usually work that has shown that, you know, we're not doomed by this or that, that there are ways of, you know, we've stopped taking care of ourselves. We expect to go to the doctor and get a pill. The first thing we need to do is just become aware of ourselves, our body, how we feel, how we move, where we are, and take it from there. And what we eat or don't eat, and how we sleep, and social contacts, touching, the inner ear, our balance. It's the basics of to nurture our body and brain, of course, to get the blood up to your head. Once upon a time, at 20, when you went to college and just didn't stop being active. But now it's from a very early age. So you just need stimulation. That's all. And it's fun. I mean, people go and get themselves stimulated every which way, even with much more complicated ways than looking at gravity and jumping and tumbling and doing good. Play, basically. Go back and play.
Dr. Joan Vernikos is a former director of NASA's Life Sciences, an author, health coach, consultant. I mean, you are a brilliant woman. I really appreciate the insight that you've provided, and I hope that our listeners really understand the wealth of what you've offered today. Joan, thank you so much for your contribution.
Thank you for your lovely comments. I appreciate them, and I had so much fun talking with you.
And we'd love to have you back again.
Anytime.
Thank you, Joan.
Thank you, Corey.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Representing lifestyle, new way of life. Listen, it's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be all right. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.